good afternoon, good afternoon, good afternoon. It is a Wednesday, February the 10th, 2016, 1:13 coming up on 1:14 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And we are having quite a fun day here remembering Lucille Ball, the legendary First Lady of television. Hour number one, we were joined by Wanda Clark, Lucy's personal assistant of over 25 years, and this hour we're going to have a great guest, Frank Gorey, who was Lucille Ball's chauffeur for more than 30 years. But before we get to Frank, I want to start this hour, just like we did the last one, taking a trip back in time, bring the legendary Lucille Ball. Nobody can hear this and be unhappy. Let's go back in time. Here we go.
Happy birthday, Frank! Happy birthday for me!
Yeah, honey, we didn't forget your birthday. We had this thing planned for weeks.
Oh,
we just
did.
Couldn't get a hold of you. We ran out of the house. Nobody could find you.
Oh, no!
Yeah. See, and I got a wonderful present for you. You want to hear it?
Hear it?
I love Lucy and she loves me. We're as happy as two can be. Sometimes we quarrel, but then how we love making up again. Lucy kisses like no one can. She's my missus and I'm her man. And life is heaven, you'll see.
Lucille Ball and Desi Arnaz, the one and only First Lady of Television. So proud today to be joined via telephone by Lucy's chauffeur for more than 30 years, Frank Gorey. Frank, how are you?
I'm fine, thanks. And yourself?
Doing very well. When you hear that song, what kind of memories does it bring back?
Well, it brings back the first time that, excuse me, I have a little bit of a cold, the first time I met Lucy. And, now, I was born in 1928, so I saw a lot of movies in the 1930s with Maurice Chevalier. And the reason why I saw them was my father was in World War One, and he was in France. And evidently, he either ran across, although he never told me this, he ran across Maurice Chevalier in some of his shows in France. And so when he would be in the American movies, of course, he'd have to go to see them, and he'd take us along with him. And so when I first met Lucille, Maurice Chevalier was with her, and because they were going to do a show with Desi and Lucy. And so I was more thrilled meeting Maurice Chevalier than I was with Lucy, because I wasn't really too familiar with Lucy. I'd seen her in a couple of movies, but I was younger and she was older, and you know, there was no connection there. Whereas Shirley Temple actually was my first love, you might say.
How did you get your job as a chauffeur with Lucille Ball?
Well, I moved to California because I thought that the weather was much, much warmer than it was in New York, and I was working as a plumber's helper in New York, and I was working on a building overlooking the Hudson River. One day the temperature was about 18 degrees, and the wind was blowing about 20 miles an hour, and I thought I was going to freeze to death, and I was working on a house that didn't have any windows in it, but the fireplace was there. So they told me, I was the plumber's helper, and they said, go out and get some wood and start a fire in the fireplace. I said, well, where's the wood? He says, it's out in the yard. I says, there's 8 inches of snow out there. He says, the wood hasn't moved. So anyhow, I had to go out and move the snow out of the way to find the wood, and came in, and I started a fire, and of course, I turned my back to the fire, and it was nice and warm, and the front was freezing, because the wind was blowing off the Hudson, and so I just said, I got to go to California, because that's where it's warm all the time. Well, it does get cool here in California, but not as bad as New York, so I was happy that I was here. And I met a lady in the bar who was Joe Fagan's wife, and her name was Ruth, and so I got acquainted with them, and he was driving Desi around in Los Angeles, and so he knew that the two of them were going their separate ways, so he figured, well, if he had another car and another driver, then he'd have both people covered. So I got the job driving the family, you might say. And so that's how it all started in 1959, in October of 1959.
In 1959, Lucille Ball is probably easily the biggest star on television, one of the most recognizable people in the world. What kind of person was she when you met her?
Well, she didn't say too much, and but she was observing everything, and she had, you know, a lot of irons in the fire, you might say. So I just was around there, and didn't have too much to say. I figured speak when you're spoken to, and that way you'll get along pretty good. So that's what I did, and she knew her trade, and she would come on the set, and I'll tell you, if there was a light missing up in the rafter someplace, she knew it right away, and she knew when she would do a show, not only did she know her own lines, she knew everybody else's lines too, because that's how into what she was doing she was, and so it was amazing to me that one person could do all the stuff that she was doing, you know, remembering her lines and acting and keeping tabs on this, that, and everything else. And also she had two children going to school, and she had her mother that was still alive, and so she had all these things going on at one time, and I was quite amazed that she was helping Desi run the studio also. So it was quite an amazing job that she did, and she did it as calm and cool and collected as anyone could be.
Now,
it was amazing to me.
Now, you came in 1959. The official divorce date for Desi and Lucy was 1960, so they were still married. What kind of relationship was that?
Well, it was a little rocky, but they were talking to each other, and so the thing is that was, I figure, hey, that's something that was their affair, and I wasn't getting mixed up with it. Plus, it was none of my business. I mean, whatever they were going to do, they were going to do, and I knew that they didn't want any input from outsiders, because it was their problem, not mine or not anybody else's. And they were talking to each other because they were running a business together. And so it was, you know, you kind of scratch your head. They can't get along together, yet they're running a business together. And so it was a little rocky for both of them, you know.
What kind of guy was Desi?
One of the nicest guys I ever met. And he was very fair, and if there was something that he didn't like, he would tell you, and he didn't get all excited and to scream and holler like that. He'd just say, hey, I didn't like what you did, so but you didn't know, so this is the way I want it, and I want you to keep that in mind. And then it was out of sight and out of mind, and he was always very nice and fair. I mean, he didn't scream and holler like a lot of people think he did. Oh, of course, he got excited because he had that Latin temperament that, everybody gets under, a little hot under the collar every once in a while.
When Lucy went back to work in 1962 on the Lucy Show, what was your schedule like then? What was your daily activities like?
Well, the first thing I had to do in the morning was go to the house in Beverly Hills and pick the kids up and take them to school. And then after I dropped the kids off at school, then I went over to Brentwood, where Lucy's mother lived. And then I would drive her to the Beverly Hills house, and she would check and see what they needed for as far as groceries and stuff was concerned. And so then we'd go down and we'd pick up the groceries and stuff and bring them back to the house. And then if the kids had to go to the dentist or whatever after school, I would have to go and pick them up from school and make sure that if they were going to the dentist, I had to pick up her mother again and take her along, because she would take the kids to the dentist or whatever, you know, was going on. And so after I had been there for, you know, a while, then I would take them to whatever they were doing after school. And I didn't have to take the Lucy's mother with us, but it kept me going, and I enjoyed the job, and it was what should I say, interesting in the fact that I was meeting people that under ordinary circumstances I would never get a chance to meet, even if I tried, you know.
So, in the 60s, when Lucy went back to work on a fairly regular basis with her TV series, you were not taking her back and forth to work?
No, my main job, when she was working at the studio, she would drive herself to the studio, and I would take the kids to school, and then I would go over to her mother's house, and then whatever they needed in the Beverly Hills house, I would take the mother, and we'd go out to the stores and buy whatever was needed, either groceries or, you know, if they were going to put some new curtains up or something like that, whatever was needed. And so we would do that. And then, of course, her mother joined the Motion Picture Mothers Club, and so I was invited to go to their lunches. And of course, naturally, it was Lucy's mother that was invited, but since I was there, I went along too. So I guess I was the only male member of the Mother's Club, Motion Picture Mother's Club. And yeah, it was enjoyable. Got to meet a lot of people and interesting people.
Want to speed up a little bit here to 1968, when the Lucy Show is put on the side, so Lucy can do the Here's Lucy Show with her two children. Her children are grown now. What are your job duties at that time?
Well, I still basically was taking care of the kids. I'd take them to school. And then, of course, when they worked at the studio, they had to have a teacher from the Los Angeles City Schools teaching them. And so they had one teacher that they had all the time. And so they would go to the studio with their mother early in the morning, and they would start the school. If they weren't right on the, if they were not needed on the set, they would go to school. And then when they were needed on the set, they usually had a general idea that, you know, we're going to need them for this set or this rehearsal or something. And so it was all pretty well organized as to when they would be actually in school on the set, or whether they were on the set learning their lines and getting ready for the Thursday night show.
By the time the kids were doing the series in the 1970s, what was your relationship with Lucille Ball at that point?
Well, fortunately for me, I got along very well with her. And, of course, I, having never been a chauffeur before, I wasn't sure just exactly what to do, but I knew that, you know, when they asked you a question, then it was time for you to answer, and don't go giving your opinion on this, that, and everything else, because they didn't ask you. So I used that as my criteria, that speak when you're spoken to. And, of course, over the years, we got along very, very well, and she was happy with me, and Desi was happy with me, and the kids seemed to be happy with me, and we're still on talking basis, and so I figured it turned out to be a pretty good situation, and I enjoyed it, and it was 33 years that everybody else doesn't get a chance to do a thing like that. And, you know, when you're working for the number one show person in the country, or in the world, you might say, it was quite an accolade as far as I was concerned.
During these years in the early 1970s, how much a part of the scene was Desi?
Would you repeat that, please?
Yeah, during the 1970s, how often did you still see Desi? How a part of your life was
he? Well, he got married. I can't tell you the exact time he got married, but the kids would see him. Like, he had a ranch down in Corona, and so on. When the kids were going to school, I'd pick them up from school on a Friday night and drive right down to Corona, and so they would stay there for the weekend, and then Sunday afternoon I'd go down and I'd pick them up and bring them home so that they could sleep in their own house and get ready for school in the morning. And then I'd pick them up and take them to school and then go back and pick up their grandmother, and we'd go and do whatever had to be done for the day. And then I'd pick them up from school, and if they had to go to Little League Baseball or whatever else they were doing, and then they went into high school, and Desi Jr. went to Beverly Hills High, and Lucy went to Immaculate Heart High School in Los Angeles. So I had to run back and forth between the two schools and pick them up, and but it all worked out in the end.
When the kids were old enough to drive and Lucy retired from television the first time in 1974, what did your job become then?
Well, when little Lucy got a car, I guess she was 16, so I guess she was allowed to have a car then. So she bought herself a Jeepster, or her mother bought her a Jeepster. Well, I'm not sure, come to think of it. She may have bought it herself, I'm not sure. But and it surprised me, because usually the kids at that time, they wanted the flashiest car that was going, but she wasn't interested in flashy. She just wanted something that was going to hold up, and I guess it was a little bit different, because a Jeepster wasn't what all the kids were clamoring about. I forget what car was the hot car of that year or the next year, but she got a Jeepster, so she had that for, I think, 2 or 3 years before she sold it to the maintenance man, and so she enjoyed that. And then she bought herself a little Mercedes coupe, and then later on, when Desi got old enough to drive and have his own car, I think, I can't remember what kind of car he had, but he had one, and she had one, and then they both moved out of the house and went on their own. So it was a little quiet after a while, but still they kept me on, so I was grateful for that too.
So when the kids left home, what did you do in a normal day?
Well, I still took her mother wherever she wanted to go. And of course, with the kids, little Lucy got married, and little Desi was actually, his mother bought him a house up on the hill in Beverly Hills, and so he was up in his own house, and little Lucy was living in Century City at the time after she got married. And so I took care of the mother, and we went still did the shopping for Beverly Hills if there was anything that had to be done, but it kind of loosened off there for a while. And then, of course, there was always something else that had to be done at the house, and so I filled in as best I could and did what I was asked to do, and which was the ordinary things of a household. You know, in other words, we need some new curtains, or we need some new dishcloths or something for the kitchen, whatever it might be. I'd run down, because in 1977 her mother passed away, and so then I would just go to the house in the morning and find out what they needed to buy for the day or for the week or something like that, and filled in like that. And they were very gracious. They kept me on, and so it what when I met this blonde lady in the bar is how I met Mrs. Fagan. That started it all. So I don't know whether I should say, well, you know, keep your eye out for blondes in bars, or whether I should say, don't keep your eye out for blondes in bars.
Well, interestingly enough, Lucille Ball remarried. She remarried Gary Morton. When Gary came in the picture, what kind of guy was he?
Well, he was he had been in show business, and he was a comic, and it was difficult for him. He had a very difficult time, because here he was thrown into showbiz like he probably never thought he would ever be, although he was in show business, you know, but goes from a comedian into the running of a studio. So he was busy all the time, you know, doing things, running the different things that Lucy would tell him what to do, and Desi would help him and tell him, you know, what he should know and what he should do about this, that, and stuff like that. So on a few of the shows, he became the executive producer, and that's sort of a major domo for the show. And you gotta, when somebody comes and has a problem and nobody knows what to do, they'll send them to the producer and say, okay, here's the problem, what do we do? So it took him a while to figure out, you know, what the ins and the outs of the business, but he did an admirable job.
When you were around Lucy's house after the kids were gone and just coming in, and if they needed a chore done, you would go and do it, but when you were coming around the house, what was it like to be around Lucille Ball at home? What was she like there?
Well, she loved her house, and she loved to play backgammon, and that was the game of the season, I guess, in Hollywood. So she would have her girlfriends come over, and not every day, but on you know, two or three days a week, something like that. And so all I had basically to do was help whenever they needed help. And every once in a while, even though she wasn't at the studio every day, there was always a show coming up that she had to get some material for this, and either I would take her over to the shop where she would pick out the material, or she would talk to the people, and they'd say, well, we'll order it, and you can have Frank pick it up. And so then I'd go down and pick it up and bring it back to her. And if she enjoyed it, she enjoyed it, and she'd keep it. And if she didn't like it, then we'd change it. And but it kept me busy, and there was always a little something, like, you know, she had a big house there in Beverly Hills, and so there was always something that had to be done. Not that it couldn't have been done by someone else, but she sort of said, well, you go get this or you go get that. And so it was one of those, do what you're told, and everything was fine. And then after she had been married to Gary Morton, if they would go out for dinner at nighttime, I didn't have to drive them, but I usually stayed at the house to make sure that everything at the house was safe and secure. And so I guess I did a pretty good job.
Being around her for as long as you were, would you say by the time the 1980s came around, was she still your employer in the sense of employer-employee relationship, or do you consider her a friend at that point?
Well, I considered it both. I know that I was still, there to do what had to be done, and after a while, you get to know what somebody usually wants, so you sort of anticipate. And then if you're not sure, you always ask, listen, do you want me to do this, that, or something like that? And you get a working relationship, like I'm sure with you where you work. If you have certain things that today you don't have to ask, whereas the first day you started, you kind of looked around and where, who, what, and how, But now you pretty well know, so it becomes a kind of a routine. And the same with running a household. When you first get married, you're both getting to learn to know each other. And after a while, you can almost tell what she's going to say before she says it.
What are some of those things that you just instinctively knew it was just routine that Lucy was going to need to have done?
Well, off the top of my head, I can't really put my finger on anything right now, but I knew that, like she was supposed to go and have people over at noontime or something like that, she would tell me, or the secretary would call me up and say, you got to go and pick this up or you pick that up. And the secretary, of course, was Wanda Clark, who you had on your program earlier. And she was, to me, she was a great, great help, and I couldn't have gotten along as well as I did without her. Everybody sort of worked in together, and it worked like an army organization. You have the majors, and you have the captains, and the colonels, and you kind of scratch your head and say, well, what do they need all these people for? But then somebody else once said, you got the men, you'll find a job for them. And that's what happened. So.
We think of Hollywood.
And it was an enjoyable time.
Well, we think of Hollywood celebrities today that they're kind of removed and they live so differently from all of us. Was Lucy the type of person who maybe would start a conversation with you, ask how you were? Was she personable at home?
After a while, a lot of things, you don't know. A lot of things become sort of automatic. She'll want to know what is Desi up to if she didn't know that particular day. And if I knew, I'd say, well, he's, supposed to be doing this. But she talked to everybody. Like, she had one thing with her mother. Every night before she went to sleep, she would call her mother up to tell her that she loved her. And I don't know whether Wanda mentioned that to you, but if she didn't, Wanda forgot, because Wanda usually mentions that when she has interviews. And so not that I'm kind of trying to cut Wanda off.
No, that was good. I didn't hear that earlier on. But Wanda and I talked about a lot of stuff. But she was still interested after all those years what Desi was doing?
Oh, yes. Yes, they talked all the time. In fact, one time Desi called, and so she had her girlfriends over there playing backgammon, so I went into to where she was playing backgammon, and I said to your husband would like to speak to you. And so she says, which one? And around the house, now you may think that, number one comedian in the country, that every other word out of her mouth was something funny. No, it wasn't that. She was a very serious person. I mean, she knew that she loved her house, and she knew just how she wanted it run. And so she would tell me or whomever, this is what I want, and this is how I want it done. And so she was basically pretty serious. Of course, after 20, 30 years, you pretty well get to know, you don't know what they're thinking, but you have an idea if they say something, you know where they're going with it. And so that made the job easier and made it easier for both of us, actually.
What would you say her relationship was with Vivian Vance?
They were good friends. And I know when Vivian got cancer, it upset her. But then she had an awful lot of friends that slowly but surely, like all of us, they start dying off. And it affected her, but she realized that, you know, life goes on. So you just put your head up and go forward, because there's not much you can do about that.
In 1986, Desi died. What was that like?
Well, it was sad, because the two of them, even though they had been divorced, she was married to Gary Morton for over 20 years, they still, I think, and a lot of other people think, that they were still in love with each other. And they would both talk every once in a while. It wasn't one of those that, well, I haven't talked to him in 8 months or something like that. They would talk. Of course, they still, up to a point, I don't know what the point was, but she was still connected to the studio with Desi. And then, of course, she purchased his share of the studio. And so then he was no longer, he retired down to Del Mar. And of course, he got married again. And so they sort of went their private lives. But still, he was still the father of the children. So he would call up, or she would call up. And they kept in touch. I mean, it wasn't one of those, I haven't spoken to him in 3 months or something like that. It was usually at least every week they were talking to each other about whatever.
You know,
usually the kids, but who knows?
It's interesting. You say Lucy wanted to know what Desi was doing. Did Desi want to know what Lucy was doing?
Well, just the ordinary things. It's just like, I don't know whether you're married, you're not married, or whether your parents are still alive, but you call them up and say, well, how's Brother Joe doing, or how is Cousin Mary doing, or something like that. It's you might say small talk, but the thing is, you were still interested. You would like to know what they're doing, and did my sister's husband get the job he was looking for, and stuff like that. If you don't ask, they may forget to tell you, because so many things are usually going on in a family. So all those little things, I mean, just because you might be the number one star in the movie industry, you still have those personal things that are going on, and they mean a lot to you.
In 1986, Lucy, after a 12-year absence, returned to regular television with Life with Lucy. How much a part of the scene were you while that was going on?
Well, when it came to the movie year of the business end of it, I was not connected with it that close. My basic, after the kids grew up and went off on their own, and after her mother passed away, my basic job was to keep my eye on the house. And so I appointed myself as the majordomo of the house. And the majordomo, actually, if you look in the big, thick English dictionary, is the head of the plantation. So I was self-appointed head of the plantation. And, of course, I had a check with everything with her, because she was the boss. and you get to know that. So, but it went well. We got along together very, very well.
Being that you were the head of the household, majordomo of the household at that time, in 86, when she went back to work on Life with Lucy, the last regular series she did, she probably was away from home more often on the set for that, being that it was a weekly series. But being around the house, were times happy when that was going on? Because that show, unfortunately, canceled after 6 episodes and got horrible reviews, that Lucy even talked about on television how unhappy a time that was for her.
Yeah, well, it was, because, you know, anybody that, especially of her stature, to be told after six weeks that, it's over, and she had no control over that. Whereas prior to that, when she was the head of Desilu, she could, even if a show was, which was not the case, don't get me wrong, but she could keep the show going even if it wasn't meeting their expectations. Whereas this show, as I understand it, it was not her show because somebody else was bankrolling it. And so when they said, you know, enough is enough, there wasn't much they could do about it. And it was a sad thing because she kind of felt that what a way to end a career, you know. And it was a shame that it had to go that way. But that's economics. And you sort of forget about economics and you say, but gee whiz, why did they end it? Because everybody loved that show. But, you know, everybody didn't love the show. And the results were in the Nielsen ratings, you know. It wasn't the number one, two, three, or four show. So
no, it was...
they figured, hey, we're just putting money down the hole, I guess.
Well,
they decided to stop it.
When I was talking to Wanda earlier on, she said, and it was her own opinion, that she was not particularly fond of the script and that series. When you saw that series, what did you think?
Well, I wasn't that involved in the business end of the movies or the television, and so I went and I looked at it, and I enjoyed it because I knew what they were doing. When all the hard work they do to practice and get the show together, and it all comes together, and everybody, I knew all the workers that were there, and you know what each person is doing, and everybody is working around getting with the same object in mind to do a good show and get it done. And of course, when you start analyzing what makes a good television show, one of the things is the writing, is the script, the right script to do. And I was not, a script writer, so I didn't have too much knowledge as to what the technicalities were. But I was like an ordinary fan. Do you like it or don't you like it? And I liked it. I didn't think it was as funny as the other shows, but it was a different kind of show. And you had to face the fact that they had her on there because her name was Lucille Ball. If it was Mary Jane Kopechnik or something, she probably wouldn't have been in it, you know? And so that's life in Hollywood.
Interestingly enough, and I know you feel Lucy was a great employer and a very nice lady, but, you know, 30-some-odd years, was there ever a funny moment that you remember, maybe a falling out or a misunderstanding you and she had, or just a funny thing you remember that happened?
Well, let's see, I don't know whether I just told you this, not just told you, but told you a little while ago. The phone would ring, and... I'd say, your husband would like to speak to you, and she'd say, which one? that would break me up. And but no, I mean, we never had a falling out, believe it or not. And I was very happy about that, because I figure, hey, if I haven't, aroused her ire, then I guess I must be doing something right.
That's
when you become a chauffeur like that, and you've never been a chauffeur before in your life, you don't know whether you're doing the right thing or the wrong thing. So, fortunately, I guess I was doing pretty well the right thing. Of course, she told me what she wanted and what she didn't want. And let me tell you a little story. The first day I drove with her, she was driving the car. And we're coming back from the studio, and we're going up a street in Beverly Hills, and she had sort of wood, if you know what I mean. In other words, she liked to get that car moving. And so we're in a Lincoln, and at the front seat is one seat across. It's not two seats like all the cars are today. So I kind of moved over toward her, and she must have been thinking, what's this guy up to, you know? trying to put the make on me or something. And what I was trying to do was look at the speedometer, because we were kind of moving up the street in Beverly Hills, and there wasn't any traffic. But still, we were going fast. So then she realized that I was trying to look at the speedometer. And she says, oh, and another thing. She says, don't ever let me catch you going this fast. And so she was aware of what was going on. And then I became aware of the fact that she was aware of what was going on. So that helped me, too.
I understand. Frank,
and then I guess I got along pretty well with all of the family, and we're still all on talking terms, so it helps.
Frank, with the last few minutes we have here, tell me about the day Lucy got sick in 1989, what happened?
Well, I was downstairs, and she had an intercom with all the phones in the house. And there were, I think, 23 telephones in the house. And because it was a big house, and of course they had a pool house and a guest house, and a laundry room. And so she buzzed from upstairs, and she said, come up, I need you right away. And it's just the way she said it, I knew that there's something's going on. So I came up, and I'm not going to tell you everything that transpired, because I'm going to put that in my own book. But she said that I don't seem to have any circulation in my legs, so I had to massage her legs so that she would get some circulation back in. And so I think I called Wanda, and Wanda called the doctor. And what eventually happened is that Gary came home, because Wanda got in touch with him, and he came home, and so he called up the paramedics, and they came up and they took her to the hospital. And then, of course, I stayed at the house. I didn't go to the hospital. And then I got the word later on in the day that she had the aorta, which is, I guess, the tube that goes in from the top of the heart, that had split. So, unfortunately, some guy had just passed away, so they got his, and it was a match. And so they put that in, and so she was coming along fine, and she was on her way. She was going to be coming home in, like, I think, three or four days. And so she started calling up, saying that she wanted this done, and she wanted that done for her homecoming and from the hospital. And of course, at 5 o'clock in the morning, the bottom part of the heart gave way, and that was what happened in April. And that was the end of Lucy's life here on Earth.
When she called home and was planning her homecoming, that's kind of interesting. How did she feel? How did she sound?
Well, she was feeling much better. I mean, if she wasn't feeling good, she wouldn't have been calling up to say, well, get this ready and get that ready, and you know, I have to have some kind of special tea or something like that. So whatever the doctors and nurses were saying, that, you better have, either two pillows or three pillows so you can sit up in the daytime or something like that while you're still recuperating. So she was giving orders that, of a general nature, and what she thought she would want and what she thought she didn't want. And of course, that was all related either to Wanda or to her husband when he would go and see her. So it wasn't directly from her to me. It was usually to Wanda or to her husband, because he went to see her every day, naturally. And the kids were going all the time to see her in the hospital. And I did not go to see her while she was in the hospital, because she was in a special room, and I figured the less traffic she had going in there, the better off she would be.
The week before she became ill, were there any signs of anything before that morning?
No, she was feeling fine, and she would think of things that she wanted done. So she would call up Wanda and say, tell him at the house that she wanted this done or that done or something like that. So, and she was feeling, you know, she was recuperating, and she was looking forward to coming home, and she was going to come home, I think, in like 3 or 4 more days. And then 5 o'clock in the morning, she woke up and she had this terrible pain, and that was the end.
Frank, I know you're going to write a book, but you don't have to give us everything that happened that day. But can you give me one thing that would be just a little insider's bit here, maybe a little a taste of what this book might show that morning with Lucy?
Well, basically, what it is how I, had no idea when I left New York that I was going to end up in the position that I ended up in, that anything like that, it was the furthest thing from my mind, and I wasn't coming out to California to get in the movies like so many people think. Oh, well, I'll go out there and I'll get in the movies and I'll become rich, you know. It sounds good, but the thing is, you got to know what you're doing when you come out to California and you want to be an actor, if that's what you want to be, or you want to be a photographer or whatever. You better go to school and get an education so you know what you're going to do. But I didn't have any of those thoughts in my. I was just getting out of the cold weather in New York, and so I left there in May of 1952, and been here in California ever since, and
now,
I like it.
When you were recounting the story of the morning that Lucy became ill, you said she had no circulation in her legs, and you went upstairs and you said, I'm not going to tell you everything because it's going to be in the book. What little tidbit might be a part of that is you have not talked about yet?
Well, I haven't talked much about it at all because it was my reaction to what was going on. I mean, I knew that whatever was happening, I knew it was her heart because I think 2 or 3 years earlier she had a slight heart attack, and so I knew that, and I knew as soon as I picked up the phone when I was downstairs, and she said, come upstairs, I need you right away. I knew it wasn't the ordinary, you know, I want you to go down to the store and buy this or buy that. I knew it was something different, just the tone of her voice. And so I was sort of on my guard, you might say, to, hey, be there and do the best you can. And, of course, you're never prepared for something like that, but you got to go through it, so you do. And so I did the best I could, and she got to the hospital, and she was coming along fine, but unfortunately, I guess God had a different idea, and that was the end of it.
Frank, I tell you, I think we just scratched the surface today, and I hope we can have you back on in the future, but I've enjoyed this quite a bit, and I hope we can talk again. Memories of Lucille Ball are always great.
Listen, the pleasure was mine, Scott. And I hope I get a chance to meet you, and I'll tell you another couple of stories that may not have anything to do with Lucille, but then maybe they do. It was my pleasure, and I thank you kindly.
Thank you, Frank. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Frank Gorley, Lucille Ball's chauffeur for more than 30 years. How interesting. Program's over for the day. This is Scott Spears heading for the dugout. Thank Wanda Clark and Frank Gorley for their very personal memories. Stay tuned to WWGH Radio.
Clock here, close to 10 o'clock there.